Welcome, my name is Paul Carter. Today's topic is how to improve your web presence with mbraining. My guests today are Marvin Oka and Grant Suzalu, co-authors of the recently published book mbraining, Using Your Multiple Brains to Do Cool Stuff. They're talking to us today from Melbourne City in Australia. I thought we might, since most of my listeners are people working on a web presence, I'm thinking that my conviction, at least, is that in order to build an effective web presence, we really need to first to go inward. Most people start with the technology, but I think technology can just take us so far unless we've done the inner work, which is to rediscover our core self using the tools like mbraining, or as you refer to it as mbit, the technique, and then having discovered or rediscovered that core self, we need to use the same tools to discover or rediscover our market niche or the people that we want to whom we want to present our products and services. So I first want to check and see if that resonates with you, and second, what you can tell us about mbraining or mbit that will help us do these two things.
I think it's a great idea, or it's a great approach, which is working from the inner, then outwards to the outer. And you're absolutely right. I was looking at a combination of the bullet points you had sent through, Paul, as well as on your website, that survey research that you had, where those three top issues came from.
Right.
And it occurred to me that the things like when people are not clear about their target market, for instance, it seems to me that the only way you're not going to be clear about your target market is to not be clear about a few other things. You're not going to be clear about what real value you actually add. You're not really clear about who benefits from this particular value that you can add, and what kind of how many different ways can you actually identify them in terms of a target market. But it starts with what in mbraining we have some very strong principles about how to work with your three brains. And one is that your heart leads. You need to first start with a heart connection, which means before you bother with things like trying to figure out your target market, first just look at who are you concerned with. Your heart is connected to what kind of community, what kind of people are having what kinds of problems that you feel it's a value within you that you want to respond to. So first, again, it starts with the heart-based connection. Rather than trying to think, what can I sell, you have to start with, who can I help, you know, and what can I bring to the game. And then the other thing is following what we call the foundational sequence, which is then from a compassionate state in the heart, a connected feeling to a community that you can help. Now your head brain needs to start getting creative about what can you do, what can you offer that adds value to this group, and in what form do they want it that adds value. Then whatever plans you come up with needs to be revalued by the heart. The heart has to say, yes, this is a great idea. I can get behind this. I'm congruent with this. And then the gut brain needs to go active to have the courage to go take action. You actually get out there and start marketing and actually start talking to people. And so it's what we call the foundational sequence. And we find it's the structure of also authentic leadership as well. But it's very much applies to coming up with how, you know, what you're going to market and how you're going to market. So rather than being someone who just pushes product or pushes a service, the first thing you got to think is what's the actual value proposition and to whom from their perspective.
Terrific. Grant, do you have anything to add to that?
One of the things that really is just echoing what Marvin said, and I think he's spelled out really clearly, but when you actually are marketing and connecting with other people, you're coming from your heart, but you're also speaking to their heart. So as you present your value proposition, your message, you really have to think, what would enliven their hearts? How can I connect and word and express what I'm positioning that it will speak to the heart? Because the heart leads both yours and theirs.
Yeah, that's a great point that Grant brings up, because if if people just try some of the... I know someone in there, for instance, in one of the quotes that came up of what if you could talk to anybody, who would you talk to? And someone mentioned about Jay Abraham, and Jay Abraham's an absolute marketing genius in what he can do. And some of his, if not many of his angles or approaches, or some of the wording that he uses, are very clever, and they're very sophisticated head-brain approaches. But I think people today are getting more and more sophisticated, being able to spot the marketing angle that comes through. If that's where you know, your clients come from, if they come from a marketing, what's my angle? The customers or the potential customers' heart intelligence will see right through that. You know, they'll say that that's not an authentic thing; it's gimmicky. Whereas if they come more from a real heart-based connection and a desire to help and internal congruency between their three brands, then their potential customer also responds to that, and they realize, hey, this person actually looks like they're the real deal. Very different than trying to come up with a gimmicky angle to put onto your website.
Excellent. One of the questions that I might ask if I hadn't ever heard of embraining before, I kind of get a clue that you have a foundational sequence. It involves the heart, the head, and the gut. But what is this all about? Where, you know, why are we talking about three brains and not more or less?
Yeah, that's great.
Great question.
Yeah, how far we want to go on this one, Grant? Because we can spend a couple of days talking about this. It's a whole field of study, an area of science that looks at, for lack of better terms, the functioning of your neurology, and it has to do with your nervous system, your central nervous system, your peripheral nervous system, your autonomic nervous system. And it looks a lot of neuroscience also predominantly focuses these days around looking at brain functioning, mostly for majority of people, it's in the head-brain type of functioning. Modern-day technology has allowed for all sorts of amazing research to emerge, research findings, all practically on a monthly, if not a weekly basis. New findings are coming up thanks to the what we can do today in measuring blood flow in the brain to a range of things. Neuroscientists are discovering some amazing things, and one of the things they did find in various different fields of study is that the things that constitute a brain, what makes a brain has to do with things, it has a whole structure, it has to have neurons, it has to have support structures, glial cells, it has to have neurotransmitters, etc., etc., and it has to form what's called a neural network, which is neurons interacting with each other in ways that they can connect up in patterns. In other words, they learn. They learn, they adapt, they store memory, they can process information. And obviously our head does that pretty well. But they've also discovered that very same structure and all of its components also exist in traditional cliches and traditional wisdom, conventional wisdom phrases. You know, when people talk about a gut instinct, or, you know, people talk about someone has a heart-based connection with someone, or they're speaking heart to heart. You know, what do they mean when they say listen to your heart? What are they actually saying? They're intuiting that there is an intelligence that actually is there, and there is. So with our work, we started to pull together the different what were disparate areas of research and pull them together into an integrated application that we call MBIT, or multiple brain integration techniques. And the applications of this are profound because each of these neural networks do different things. And so the head does what you would think the head does. It makes meaning, it has perception, it does your thinking processes. But your heart does exactly what you would think it does if you look back on the kinds of phrases and the kinds of references people typically use. And the heart is responsible for processing a lot of the emoting processes, a lot of your emotional processing. It has to do with your values, heart-based values. And it also has to do with how you feel about other people, what we call your relational affect. And your gut does some very fascinating things. It's responsible for your core identity. So 70-80% of your immune system is in your gut, and that the immune system has to figure out what is you and not you. You know, when you digest food or when you digest learning, you make it part of you. It's also responsible for safety and protection, self-preservation. So a lot of fear-based anxiety issues, etc., are felt in the gut first, hence the classic phrase butterflies in the stomach, etc. Or if someone doesn't have courage and is overcome by fear, you call them gutless. Or someone who needs courage needs guts. It's also responsible for taking action. So the courageous actions come from a gut-based mobility. So the They have very, very different functions. And now that we know that, we realize that, well, hang on, it changes or provides incredible precision and opens new possibilities for personal development, for communication, for understanding your intuition and instincts, for health and well-being, just for a whole range of things.
Great. If I were just wanting to get into using my three brains, my head, my heart, and my gut, and I recognize that I have a preference for using my head over the rest of these things and sometimes get into trouble for it, how exactly would I start? I mean, aside from buying your book, which I have done and recommend to everybody, and we'll talk about a little later, but I have read your book and I've found it extremely helpful, and I do practice some of the techniques. Can you describe one or two of these techniques that might help a budding web presence developer?
Yeah, it's summed up in what we call the MBIT roadmap, which essentially comes in four stages. And the first step is actually getting in communication with your three brains, the fact that they are talking to you, and they talk to you in different ways. But before you can do that, before you can actually get in touch and listen to the signals, you have to be in a state of what's called autonomic balance or autonomic coherence. So I'm going to hand over to Grant. Grant, if you want to do a quick explanation of the ANS and what it's going to take to actually get into balance.
So we have an autonomic nervous system, which is effectively means an automatic nervous system. It's responsible for keeping your heart beating and your breathing when you're not consciously breathing, and all of the automatic functions that occur in your body. And this autonomic nervous system is divided up into two arms, sympathetic and parasympathetic. The sympathetic is known as more colloquially, is the fight and flight system. So it's the stress system. It's the bit that kicks in when you see something that's dangerous or is some sort of threat, gets the adrenaline flowing, gets the heart beating, and gets you ready to either fight or run away. The parasympathetic system is the opposite side. So for the sympathetic system, you can think of as being like the accelerator in the car. And the parasympathetic is the opposite. It's the brake. And it brings your system, your autonomic nervous system, and the whole of your mind-body back to balance after the danger or threat has passed. So it's also known as the feeding and fornicating system or the rest and repose system. And it's involved in helping you digest food and really build up your energy levels in your body, ready to fight and flight again should that be needed. Well, it turns out that this autonomic nervous system connects with the head brain, the heart brain, and the gut brain in a way that when you're in sympathetic mode, it puts the heart and gut brain into that fight and flight mode or stressed mode. And it, in the head brain, you know, we have a left and right hemisphere. We have two hemispheres. Well, it turns out that in sympathetic dominant mode of the autonomic nervous system, your right hemisphere kicks in. And the right hemisphere is where we do a lot of the survival emotions and a lot of that sort of threat monitoring and negative processing of checking the environment for threat. It's also said to be the very part of the creative processes are done a lot in the right hemisphere, and a lot of the emotional aspects of language. Whereas the left hemisphere is responsible for the more logical thinking and for the more positive emotions. So, for example, research has been done on people who meditate on loving kindness meditation, and that increases left frontal lobe. So when you're in parasympathetic mode, your left hemisphere becomes dominant and your heart and gut brains go into a more lower energy mode, a more rest and repose mode. And in order to get your three neural networks, your heart, gut and head neural networks, to really start communicating, connecting, they do that best when they're neither too depressed or too stressed, so neither too sympathetic nor too parasympathetic. When you bring them into what's called a balanced mode or a coherent mode, then the communication channels of the vagus nerve really open up and the signals between the head, heart and gut can really get through, and you're in a state that allows you to communicate and hear the responses from your in your head, from your heart and gut.
As Grant mentioned, that you need to first start with being in an autonomically balanced state. And the easiest way to do that is through the breathing process. A lot of the research shows that a basic breathing process of a 6-second inhalation and a 6-second exhalation, that type of a cycle, if you do it for several minutes, you'll go into an autonomically balanced state very easily. And from there, you can pay attention to the communication signals between your three intelligences. Now the thing is to get them aligned, and part of the alignment is, again, going through a proper sequence of first starting with your heart and then going to your head. Let your heart influence your head. The heart leads as a general principle that we work from. And then from whatever the head thinks about from the heart-based state, the heart values it again and sends those signals back down to the gut so the gut can take action on it. And those signals get sent back again to the heart, so the heart again maintains the overarching orientation that's values based. Now, what happens is when you do this at a deep level, you reach a level of coherence that is uniquely different, if you're doing this for a while, than just simply being in a calm state or a state where you're kind of just flowing in the zone. We start to find that the heart is able to access, you can call it different words, the words that we work from are, the heart can reach states of compassion. And by this we don't mean just empathy or just feeling for another person. We mean that it's a state of feeling connected to other people and to be connected to what their experiences are, if there's any suffering that's going on their end, that you feel for that, you feel that within your own heart, and you want to do something about it. That compassion that doesn't take action is not compassion. That's just simply a feeling state. You'll recognize compassion by compassionate acts. Things happen. And so one of the things about the highest expressions is while they each of the three different brains might have a strength of a highest compassion, but the reason why it works and why it's the highest expression is because it's naturally integrative. All the other two brains have to come to play, so all three brains are actually working together. And so as you see with compassion, the feeling state of feeling what's the feeling that the sorrows or the problems or suffering of other people causes you to think in particular ways in the head brain and causes you to act in particular ways in the gut brain. And so that compassion in the heart, wanting to now help people, to serve, then feels the head thoughts. And the head's natural strength is in creativity. The head can come up with all sorts of things. And usually, if it's not fueled by a more empowering heart-based state, then the head can come up with all sorts of things that will get you in trouble. You know, you can start to fantasize about things going wrong to the point that you're absolutely gripped with fear, when in fact nothing's really happening at all. It's just the present, and you can just move on. So instead, by the heart leading from a compassionate state, and the head then engages its highest expression that comes from creativity, it can now start to create possibilities of the future. It can start to create, well, if this is what's happening for the people that I'm connected with and feel for, then what could I do about that? How could I respond? What's a better future? What's a better way of going about things than where I could make a difference? And the head starts to create, from a compassionate state, the head starts to create new possibilities that could not emerge unless you were connected to the people that you care about. Then the heart revalues whatever the plans and ideas that the visions and the goals that the head comes up with. It signals down to the gut, and now the gut can activate courage. The courage to go against any fears or insecurities, the courage to actually go against ego-based conditioning, the courage to act on the values that are coming in, that are in play from those compassionate states, so that you can act upon what the heads come up with and to fulfill what is meaningful and fulfilling to the heart. And what happens from these highest expressions when you're acting from states of compassion, creativity, and courage, we've started to find that wisdom now starts to emerge, and it's a level of wisdom in your decision making and action taking that you could not predict before you were in ways of being that were compassionate, creative, and courageous. Otherwise, you're trying to always solve a problem, whereas from states of compassion, creativity, and courage, it's not about as much as solving a problem as much as expressing who you really are, how you really want to respond given the situation that you're facing. And we find greater levels of authenticity arise. A way of being starts to emerge that is a much deeper, more connected sense of really, the, for lack of better terms, the essence of who you are, what we lovingly call it's a liberating of the human spirit.
Very helpful. I noticed that in myself and in some of the people I work with, I have a lot of resistance about going out and making eyeball-to-eyeball contact with people for the purpose of either learning about what their needs are so that I can develop a relevant product or service, or then if I do have something I can offer that would really help people, get out there and making those eyeball-to-eyeball connections. And I'm just wondering how what you're talking about here can help specifically with that issue.
Yeah, there's two major components that immediately come to mind about what you've just described. Well, one has to do with, first, where is your focus? Is your focus on yourself, or is your focus on the other person? If your focus is on yourself, then it becomes, you know, I need to connect with the person. I need to make a sale. I need to do. If you come from that kind of a framework, then all sorts of insecurities can abound at that point. Whereas if you focus on the other person, you focus on them first, and you start to think, well, who are? I'm curious. I want to know who are they. What are their challenges? What are their issues? You know, what's going on for them? And you start there first. You'll find a lot of your insecurities not only fade away; they become irrelevant. Because it's not about you. It's about them, and it's about what do they need, and can you help them with that? And then it comes the second component has to do with which brain is going active for you at that point. So if it's just a head base, if you're coming more from your head when you're interacting with people, your head, as I said, your head will come up with all sorts of thoughts, right? And if you have a slight degree of insecurity or trepidation, then coming from your gut's a little bit in a fear state or anxiety state, your head will come up with all sorts of fearful thoughts about what if they don't like me and what if it doesn't work. And when you have that kind of internal dialogue running, then it's very hard to connect with people. And if your gut is in fear or it needs to protect or it's not feeling confident about yourself, then yes, very tough to actually go out and meet, you know, have that, as you say, that eyeball-to-eyeball contact. But if you start from the heart, if you start from a values-based state of also being connected, of what we call relational affect, if you're feeling connected to the other person, of seeing them as who they are, and just for who they are, and what concerns do they have, and really trying to understand their world, and having compassion there, and you'll naturally want to respond. It's like if you're talking to a loved one, and there's something troubling them. You naturally want to help. You're not focused on your own insecurities. You're trying to, you know, feel like you how do I respond? How do I help? Now, we're not saying, you know, you need to treat all your customers like their loved ones, but like your close family. However, there is an element there where you do have to feel connected. If you're not connected to your target market, if you're not connected to your customer or your prospect, then basically you're just, at best, you'll be a pitch artist. All you're doing is pitching. And it's this is not a great way to build a relationship with your customer base in that way. But if you just focus on doing the good work, focus on actually helping, coming from a heart base first, then you'll find that a lot of the insecurities of having that eyeball-to-eyeball contact or a lot of those hesitations, like I said, they don't get resolved. They just vanish. They become irrelevant. You want to go out and help. And again, it comes back to belief in what you have. Do you actually believe you can help? It starts from a base of integrity. Do you believe you have something that adds value? Then if so, then if you don't get this across to other people who could use it and who could be helped by it, you basically deprive them of value. You become a value taker rather than a value adder. So it starts with a heart-based connection first.
Yes, and it's about building a business. It's a long-term business, not a one-shot deal. So it's about building relationships. So it's about coming from service. If you want to really come from service and provide value to them over the long term, then you will want to go out and connect with them. There's another point I would like to add to the two that the great points that Marvin's just made, which is the third one, Paul, and that is if you're sitting there thinking, I've got to go out and do some prospecting, I've got to go out and talk to people, what autonomic mode are you in as you're thinking about that, as you're preparing to go out? If you get into a slightly stressed, if you experience that as slightly stressful and you go into sympathetic dominant, at that point in sympathetic dominance, you are going to have a very different way of embraining, of using your three brains together. They're going to be in that stressed mode. They're not going to be communicating effectively. And they will go into a way of responding that is not the most creative, is certainly not compassionate, and is not where the really generative courage comes from. It will go into that fear and anxiety mode, and it will tend to go into right hemisphere processing, whereas in a balanced mode, autonomic mode, your left and right hemispheres of your head brain are both functioning together, so you bring the most creativity, left and right hemisphere creativity, to your experience as you think about going out there. Your heart will be not in compassion, because compassion is in coherence, it is in the balance point. You can't do coherence when your heart is you can't do compassion when your heart is in stressed mode or depressed mode, in sympathetic or parasympathetic dominance. And equally, if you know you've had negative experiences in the past with sales and or marketing, and it triggers off in you an anchored response to go into a slightly depressed mode or a parasympathetic dominant mode, and then that sort of down-regulates everything. And again, that's not where you'll be at your most optimal, because you'll predominantly be in left hemisphere head brain, where you'll be overthinking. Your narrative will end up being looping the loop on your thoughts and getting more and more depressed, and your heart and gut will go into the sorts of responses where you will find it hard to motivate yourself to get moving, that motility. So one of the best things you can do before you start to prepare to go and do, to think about going and doing the sorts of sales and marketing activities that you know you need to want to provide that service, that connection to other people, to add that value, is to stop, sit, and do some of that balanced breathing, the 6 second in, 6 second out breathing into your heart, and feelings of compassion, that sense of service, connecting with others, into your heart, moving it up to your head, adding in a sense of creativity, and then down through your heart to your gut, to feel that sort of gutsy motivation to get out and really make a difference in the world. And if you do that for even a couple of minutes, it will shift your autonomic mode into a coherent, balanced mode that will allow you to emerge new ways of doing yourself around this context, around this issue, around this activity, and you'll find that the old patterns of responding just dissolve, and you see it through new eyes, shall we say.
Great. So I'm thinking about the person who responded to my questionnaire about what are the biggest challenges, who said, not being totally clear on my market. So given what you said, how could you wrap up a starting point for this person?
Perhaps change, one of the first places this person could start is maybe change I'm guessing what kinds of unconscious questions are being asked in their mind that they're trying to pursue. And one of them currently might be something like, who's my target market? Who can I sell to? Who would buy my stuff? Whatever it might be. Perhaps a better question that they could be asking themselves is, who can I help? And if you start to now ask that question, who can I help, you would look around and you'd start to see, well, what groups, what people, what communities would really benefit from what I have to offer? And bang, there's your target market.
Got it. Thank you. And one of the other responses to what the biggest challenge is was not having enough time or commitment and expertise. How would you respond to this person? What's the first thing they should do?
Okay, while they are related, they are slightly different from each other. First of all, not having the time There's basically two ways one cannot have time, because we all, as you know, the old cliches are still somewhat true, which is we all have all the same amount of time, so no one has more time or less time than anybody else. The first issue is going to be about prioritization. What do you do with the time that you actually have? And prioritization is based on values, what's important to you. So once again, it starts with the heart. Connect in with your heart, understand what's important to you, and given what's important to you, you do those and you follow those priorities. So once again, if you are connected deep with your heart and your heart intelligence, and you're connected to your values, then you'll know how to prioritize. And when you prioritize accordingly, then you've got all the time in the world to actually do what's important to you, because that's what you're focused on. Don't do the unimportant things. Then you run out of time for the important things. So it's a matter of prioritization. At that level. The other way you can run out of time is just simply disorganization or lack of organization. Given what's a priority to you, are you organized to act on that priority? And again, at that point, that's when a lot of your classic time management approaches, etc., can help. But it first starts as exactly what your approach talks about, Paul, which is it starts on the inside first. Before you deal with all the external behaviors, you've got to make sure you got your priorities proper at that point. Now, on things like commitment, commitment, again, is a decision process, it has more to do with congruency. If your heart, your head, and your gut are aligned, it's no longer an issue about commitment. You just act congruently and whole, and for lack of better terms, wholeheartedly, because that is what you're on about. Oftentimes when Grant and I are working our live trainings and live seminars, that we might do some demonstrations with people from the audience about taking them through the basic processes, and often they'll be hesitant on particular goals, not knowing how to actually approach something, or there's something they know they should do that they aren't doing. But when we take them through the process of first breathing, getting into autonomically coherent state, breathing, getting in touch with their three brains, and then going from the heart to the head, back to the heart, then down to the gut, then back to the heart. When those three brains are now aligned, they're clear. They have no problem taking action because they're now totally congruent. They know exactly what's important to them and what they need to do, and they simply act. It's not a question of commitment. It's just they're aligned. They're congruent. They're going to do this. So certainly, going through the foundational sequence will handle it. It's not about trying to get yourself to do something. It's about being aligned behind what it is that you're doing. And you can't do that if your three brains are unintegrated and not communicating with each other. And again, expertise, the third element, is a different thing altogether again. And expertise, first of all, starts with, are you passionate about what you need to become an expert in? Again, your heart intelligence has to come into play. Do you really want to get good at what you're doing? Do you have some innate abilities along that particular area? And then, once again, once you're committed, once you're aligned and congruent about what you want to do, then getting good at something, learning about it, practicing it if it's a skill, is not an issue anymore. You would just naturally do that because it's a natural self-expression of who you are. And that's what we're saying about when you come from the highest expressions, a more authentic self starts to emerge. You just naturally do what your three brains are aligned and congruent about doing. You express you as opposed to your head trying to get the rest of you to try and do what your head thinks is the right thing. Well, that's not going to work. Everyone knows that leads to a lot of frustration. But when you get yourselves aligned, when you get your inner intelligences all aligned, then you just simply act in the world.
And I'll add to that. I think it's a great point that expertise is about, in a lot of ways, about you, your core identity, you seeing yourself, experiencing and feeling yourself at a very deep and visceral level as the expert, that you embody that expertise. And that requires you to deeply assimilate and digest your learnings. It's very much a gut-brain function. So as you're practicing, there are ways in which you can improve your learning processes, accelerate those learnings, to really embody them more quickly, and that is to really deeply feel at a core level that this is you as you're doing and practicing whatever it is that you need expertise. And of course, if it's just cognitive knowledge that you need, just head-based stuff, then there's nothing like just sitting down and doing the hard yards, going through and memorizing whatever it is that you need to memorize, the facts, the figures, the data, or learning some cognitive skill. But if true expertise goes beyond just cognitive skill and requires a level of mastery that needs you to truly embody the knowledge to digest it. Check out brain function.
Great. The last challenge that I want to bring up today was establishing systems, daily activities that move toward the end results, such as new prospects, customers, and clients, and the new, more sales. So you've certainly talked about a great many techniques, and suppose I'm getting up in the morning and I'm getting my day going. Is there some sequence or some system that might help in getting the daily activities going that I need to move towards the end result I want?
There are. There are a range of things. I'm just thinking of a range of different sources that give you some clues as to how you might go about things, assuming that you know what systems are required. So that's just straight, you know, content knowledge. Do you know, you know, you need a client follow-up system? Do you know you need it? Aside from all the actual structure of what's needed in terms of, you know, what is required, in terms of actually getting yourself to act and do those systems, you know, much less put them into place, much less actually do them once they're actually in place. One of the useful things I came across many years back, some researchers suggested that we are more hardwired to actually respond to the immediate rather than the long term. They're saying, for instance, you know, classic biological evolutionary needs, that if suddenly you're faced with some saber-toothed tiger, it's more important that you run or fight in the moment rather than try and figure out how this affects your long-term plans. And so what happens is when people set long-term plans, and if it just stays in the head, if it just stays in the cognitive functions of the head, the gut's going to be more prone to take. Remember, the gut intelligence is the one that causes you to act. The gut intelligence is more prone to actually respond to the present. It's more prone to respond to, okay, what's happening now in my current environment, and I'll do that. Hence, why it's so easy to get distracted, or why we have the tyranny of the urgent. We're quick to respond to the urgent rather than the important. And so what one sets of researchers said was, one of the ways you can actually do that, the way to actually fulfill your long-term intentions, or in this case with your client, to actually do the systems that are in place, somewhere in the design of the system, you need to make sure that whatever are your long-term goals become immediately present in your environment. And this is why things like, for instance, scheduling works really well, if I need to get a certain report done, for instance, if there's actually a due date, because that due date is in my calendar in front of me, as soon as I get up and I get to my work area and I see what's due coming up, usually that's enough to trigger the gut to go, we need to respond to that, right? As opposed to just holding it all in your head. And so if you've got systems that where you have to follow up with clients, or you need to make sure you do your invoicing, or you need to get your proposals out, or whatever it might be, if it's not immediately pressing in your external environment, your gut will start to go, well, you know, it's not immediately there, so I don't need to respond to it right away. I know what the head wants to do, but that's not what the gut's going to respond with. The other aspect to look at as well is how strongly valued is it by the heart. If you'll notice human nature, we seem to have no problem taking action immediately on things we really want to do and that we really care about. And so if someone is now forgetting things or forgetting to actually do the systems they put into place, or just can't be bothered putting the systems into place, first of all, you need to check in and say, is it important enough? Has your heart intelligence processed this to recognize that it's important for you to actually do this?
Great. Anything to add, Grant?
Yeah, I was just going to say the other thing that I would suggest is part of a system of getting going each day and getting focused, that is to start in a balanced mode, to actually just take a couple of minutes and do a mini meditation that will put you into laser-like coherence. You know, it's like the difference between a normal incandescent light globe, which puts out incoherent light. So, you can light a room with a light bulb, but with a laser, all of the photons are traveling coherently together. So the difference between a laser and a light bulb is one is coherent and one is incoherent. With a laser, you can cut through steel. With a laser, you can shine a beam of light from the Earth to the Moon and back. But you can't do that with a normal light globe. Even with the same number of watts, same amount of power, unless it's coherent, you really can't get the effectiveness and productivity. So by putting yourself into that coherent mode at the beginning of the day, breathing through your heart, into your head, down through your heart to your gut, holding in mind what you want to do with your day and what you want to focus on, and just spending 2 minutes at the beginning of the day as part of the foundation of whatever systems you put in place, you'll find yourself being able to be more effective, more committed, more productive, and able to really push through any of the barriers that you've been stopping yourself in the past with.
Thank you very much for that. I find that very helpful, especially the analogy of the laser and the light bulb. I'm going to put that into place tomorrow. First wake up, I'm going to say, what am I going to be today? Am I going to be a light bulb or am I going to be a laser?
Absolutely. And then breathe like a laser. Well, you know, lasers work, they pump. They actually pump the photons back and forth between two mirrored surfaces until they reach a threshold, and then the energy bursts out past the end mirror that's been half-silvered. So it's the same with you're breathing with that 6 second in, 6 out, breathing in the sort of the joy into your heart, the joy of being alive and really wanting to be of service to the world, and bring that up to creativity in your head, down through to gutsy courage in your gut, and back out your heart. And if you do that cycle of breathing, 6 seconds in, 6 seconds out, really, you can actually imagine a colored light, whatever it is for you, moving through your body as you breathe it in and out, until you get to that point after a couple of minutes where you are like a laser, ready to take action on your day and get your business really happening and really solve some problems for some people out in the world.
Excellent. Excellent. Tell me a little more about the book and how they can buy the book or get in touch with you if they have questions or need additional information.
So for a start, thank you, Paul, for your passion and interest in MBIT. It was a delight when I first got an email from you saying you'd found the book and bought it, and that you'd found the information that's so impactful, and you were starting to use it in your own work. We really appreciate that. We want to share MBIT with the world, multiple brain integration techniques. We ourselves are coming from this highest expression of compassion and creativity and courage, and ask ourselves every day, how can we be the most compassionate, creative, and courageous to make a difference in the world, to bring wisdom to the world? So if people want to learn more about the book, then they can go to our website, which is www.mbraining.com. That's mbraining, mbraining.com. The book's available on an e-store off our site or amazon.com. If they want to contact us, the email's on the website. We also have a Facebook page, which we post daily too, with the latest research about the heart, brain, gut, brain, and motivational messages about the highest expressions and interesting information to inspire people and add value to their lives. So join us on our website, join us on our Facebook page, connect with us, read the book, start learning how to make a difference in the world, because I think we'd all agree that the world needs more wisdom and more compassion. So it's a way of being able to add value to your business, add value to your life and the lives of the people you care about by putting your brains in the optimal state, connecting them together, and really starting to make your heart sing.
Great. One little note I would add, that when you're typing in mbraining, it's the letter M, as in mother, it's not E-M, it's the letter M, braining.com.
Good point. Thank you.
And for any of you listeners in the car who can't write that down, just email me, and I'll be happy to put you in touch with where you can buy the book or how you can contact Marvin and Grant. So again, this has been an interview with Marvin Oka and Grant Suzalu, and the topic has been Improve Your Web Presence with Embraining. And I want to thank you, Marvin and Grant, for sharing your knowledge of Embraining and being so generous. I know how valuable the information you have shared will be to our listeners. And thank you, too, listeners, for stopping by. Until next time, this is Paul Carter. Okay. Well, great. Thanks again. Have a wonderful day.
All right.
Okie dokie.
Thanks, Paul.
You have a wonderful evening, I believe.
Yes, that's right, Grant. Okay. Grant and Marvin.
Cheers, Paul.
Take care.
Thanks.
Ciao.
Take care.
Bye-bye.